Conservative? You bet. Controversial? Right again. It's time to squabble on the Jim Benson Show.
This is Mr. Montgomery. I met him a few weeks ago in New York.
Oh, how are you? You live here?
Yes.
Well, maybe you know what a zombie is.
When a person dies and is buried, it seems there's certain voodoo priests who have the power to bring him back to life.
Horrible.
It's worse than horrible because a zombie has no will of his own. You see them sometimes walking around blindly with dead eyes, following orders, not knowing what they do, not caring.
You mean like Democrats?
That was comedian Bob Hope from a movie in 1940. I couldn't resist playing it, it being so timely today, just as it was back then, I suppose. Anyway, hello and welcome to another edition of the Jim Benson Show, conservative talk radio covering the issues that concern you here on the BBS Radio Network. If you'd like to call into the show, the phone number is 888-627-6008. Again, that's 888-627-6008. Let's start with a few words about the fourth Democratic presidential debate held last week in Ohio. After seeing parts of the first three debates and recognizing with alarm the far-left weirdness of these people, I found the fourth debate rather boring in that it contained nothing particularly new from what you'd expect from them. Here are a few highlights of the debate from DailyMotion.com. Play sound by two, please.
There are states that have passed laws that will virtually prevent women from having access to reproductive health care. And it is not an exaggeration to say women will die. Poor women, women of color will die because these Republican legislatures in these various states who are out of touch with America are telling women what to do with our bodies. Women are the majority of the population in this country. People need to keep their hands off of women's bodies and let women make the decisions about their own lives.
What this president has done is that he has sucked up to dictators. He has made impulsive decisions that often his own team doesn't understand. He has cut and run on our allies, and he has enriched himself at the expense of the United States of America.
It has been the most shameful thing that any president has done in modern history. Excuse me. In terms of foreign policy.
The slaughter going on in Syria is not a consequence of American presence. It's a consequence of a withdrawal and a betrayal by this president of American allies and American values.
I will end these regime change wars by doing two things. Ending the draconian sanctions that are really a modern day siege. And I would make sure that we stop supporting terrorists like Al-Qaeda in Syria.
My son did nothing wrong. I did nothing wrong. I carried out the policy of the United States government in rooting out corruption in Ukraine.
We are literally using Donald Trump's lies, and the second issue we cover on this stage is elevating a lie and attacking a statesman. That was so offensive. He should not have to defend ourselves, and the only person sitting at home that was enjoying that was Donald Trump, seeing that we're distracting from his malfeasance and selling out of his office.
And within 4 seconds, he shot her and killed her through her home window. She was in her own home. And so I am not going to give these police officers another reason to go door to door in certain communities, because police violence is also gun violence, and we need to address that.
So let me be clear on this. Costs will go up for the wealthy. They will go up for big corporations and for middle class families. They will go down. I will not sign a bill into law that does not lower costs for middle class families.
Your signature, Senator, is to have a plan for everything except this. No plan has been laid out to explain how a multi-trillion dollar hole in this Medicare for All plan that Senator Warren is putting forward is supposed to get filled in.
You are making Republican talking points right now in this room by coming out for a plan that's going to do that. And I appreciate Elizabeth's work. But again, the difference between a plan and a pipe dream is something that you can actually get done.
I'm really shocked at the notion that anyone thinks I'm punitive. Look, I don't have a beef with billionaires. My problem is you made a fortune in America. You had a great idea. You got out there and worked for it. Good for you. But you built that fortune in America, I guarantee you built it in part using workers all of us help pay to educate.
The problem is in the polls. The problem is the policy. And I don't need lessons from you on courage, political or personal.
There was so much more, of course, but you get an idea of the atmosphere. Here's Rush Limbaugh's take on the fourth debate.
Man, oh man, that was hard to watch last night. I kept hoping that somehow something would happen that would make the time fly, but it didn't. Yeah, the worst part about it, I mean, really, what was it? What was this debate last night? Just seemed like another night for CNN. Instead of three people bashing Trump, we had 13 or 14 of them bashing Trump. It was just 13 or 14 people advancing or talking about the Democrat agenda. But, man, when that many people are engaged in it, out to the overwhelming or overarching sensation I got was just total dystopian. Good Lord, folks, listening to those people talk about life, listening to them talk about the country, all is lost. Everything's hopeless. And it appeared that everybody on that stage looks out across America and sees a bunch of people barely making it, barely hanging on, desperately clinging to every word uttered by anybody from government as the only way they have any chance of having an enjoyable life or any kind of a future. I mean, it was misery on parade. There wasn't one thing optimistic. There wasn't one thing uplifting. There wasn't one candidate who looked out into the camera, looking out across America, and encouraged anybody.
Limbaugh is so good at stuff into a coherent perspective. And it really helps when you're feeling down about the prospects of this nation's future, given the daily bombardment by the leftist-dominated mainstream news media, MSM, of their propaganda meant to make you believe you're in a distinct minority in America regarding your political views. That is, that just about everybody thinks like these crazy leftist Democrats do. This brings me to a few more words about the ongoing phony impeachment hysteria being whipped up in the media. Judge Jeanine Pirro said it best on her program Justice on Fox yesterday. In an article on Breitbart News about the show, it was noted that Pirro decried efforts to impeach President Donald Trump by likening to those of the medieval Star Chamber. Judge Pirro said, "There has been a lot of talk about constitutional crises, but the only constitutional crisis right now is the lawless attempt to impeach the president. The effort by the Democrats to remove this president without regard to rules, without calling a vote, is a reminiscent sleight of hand known as the medieval Star Chamber. The Star Chamber, of course, in royal palaces, used and abused the arbitrary power in secret proceedings to target enemies, always casting doubt on the legitimacy of the proceedings." She continues, "They ended 400 years ago, or did they? Today, our Congress, run by radicals resisting the will of the American people, getting revenge whatever way they can, has turned her Congress into a star chamber. Their attempt to impeach the president entails no vote, no due process, no right to be present, call witnesses, or cross-examine. The president is entitled to nothing. To these radicals, truth is irrelevant. Their mission is to do whatever they can to rid themselves of a man they hate. They lie on record, she said. See, the Democrats don't want a formal impeachment of the president. That would reveal this charade for what it is, and all their charges would fall apart. This is nothing more than an attempt to drive voter support away from Trump in sufficient numbers that he would be forced to resign. And this is all also being driven by powerful forces behind the scenes to get rid of Trump. I'll have a lot more on this later in the show. And while it's sad but true that there are tens of millions of brainwashed, brain-dead ninnies, that is, fools out there who are in endless propaganda, who support the madness of the left, believing it's actually going to be good for our country, I believe more and more people are waking up that they are being lied to and tricked, and on a grand scale. In the past week or so, we've seen the revelations by James O'Keefe's Project Veritas and the insider at CNN providing verification of that so-called news network's extreme left-wing bias and obsession with destroying President Trump. As has been observed by others, this is only the proverbial tip of the iceberg when it comes to the mainstream news media's left-wing bias and ongoing vendetta against Trump. They are joined, of course, by many others in the Washington, D.C. political establishment, the deep state, if you will, the swamp that Trump has vowed to drain. And they're also joined, along with almost the entire Democratic Party, Hollywood, and many enormous wealthy and powerful individuals and organizations, such as the nonprofits. And there are literally billions of dollars being funneled into promotion of created left-wing causes, including the destruction and removal of Donald Trump. I'll have more to say about this money and these forces in a few minutes. But first, let's look at a few other politicians on the political left who get constant, widespread acclaim in the mainstream media, which seems to always portray them in a positive light, hanging on their every word with sycophantic fervor and promoting them and their leftist causes at every turn. Among the most celebrated left-wing politicians today are members of the so-called squad of freshman Democratic U.S. representatives Ilhan Omar and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, also known as AOC, author of legislation promoting the radical environmental Green New Deal that, if actually implemented, would bankrupt and destroy America. As former Marxist David Horowitz of the Freedom Center has observed, the Democratic Party today is the Communist Party, having been taken over by the radical left. Democrats embracing and promotion of causes such as climate change hysteria, we're all going to die in 10 years if we don't totally eliminate fossil fuels, mass immigration from the third world, redistribution of wealth, free income, health care, education, and housing for everyone, including illegal aliens, soon to become citizens, of course, and so on, are portrayed as politically mainstream ideas today in the media. This is meant to make you go along, or at least think that your opposition is a waste of time. When we look more closely at these people, however, we begin to see their outrageous hypocrisy, like you do with most leftists. For example, journalist David Steinberg and others have uncovered evidence being investigated that indicates Omar, a refugee from Somalia, may have married her biologist to get him into this country and subsequently committed immigration fraud, student loan fraud, and tax fraud. And AOC has recently been accused of mishandling close to $1 million in campaign contributions and is being investigated about it. Here's Steinberg, editor of PJ Media, telling radio host Glenn Beck about what he's uncovered regarding the allegations against Omar. Will you please play soundbite 4?
Tell me now what you have found and the facts that line everything up.
Well, there's so much here I'd love to go over with you, so much evidence I've published. Here's the basics for your audience. Back in 2003, this man named Ahmed N. Elmi graduated from Arlington Senior High School in St. Paul, Minnesota. While he was attending that school, he was living with a man named Nur Saeed Mohammed. Nur Saeed Mohammed is Ilhan Omar's father. So for the 1 year he was attending this school in Minnesota, his legal guardian was Ilhan Omar's father. Now, I don't have the school record yet. I can't acquire those without a warrant. But I do have several witness statements placing him in that address, saying that was his father. And I do have address records putting both of them in that address. Now, certainly that would be something that you would think a reporter would ask her about over this time. Mm-hmm. No one's asked her about it. Most of what I've published has been ignored. In the one or two times that she has been confronted by the media, a New York Times reporter asked her a couple of questions, an AP reporter asked her a couple of questions. Nobody has brought up that. The second bit of information I have showing that this marriage was fraudulent is that from 2009 to 2011, which is the extent of her marriage to Ahmed Elmi, Ilhan Omar was attending college at North Dakota State University. Also enrolled was Ahmed Elmi. Now, shortly after she married this man, who appears to be her brother, they both enroll in the same college. I checked address records. Ilhan's first husband, who she has two kids with, also lived in the same address with Ilhan Omar and her brother/husband during those 2 years. She was attending North Dakota State University. She was living with two husbands at the same time and her two children.
In the same house?
In the same house 1 year and then in the same house the next year. They were all in the same two addresses. Actually, her first husband, whom she has the two kids with, the records actually show she spent more time living with him during her marriage to the second husband than she spent living with the second husband. And then, as soon as she gets her degree in 2011, she heads back to Minnesota, and according to her, her second marriage fell apart, and she never spoke to him again. That's it. The extent of her marriage took place while they were both attending college.
Okay, now, which is weird, because her kids and her husband are living in the same house. All right, so she claims that she never spoke to him again, and she claimed that in court for the divorce, correct?
She did not divorce Ahmed Elmi, her brother, until 2017, when this became a liability for running for a federal office. So that occurred early in 2017. She filled out a form saying she had not spoken to him since 2011. She had no idea of where to find him. She had no contact with him, with any relatives. She said she had tried to search for him online with social media. Every single question she answered on that form is a provable lie, a provable instance of perjury. There's nine instances of perjury just on this one form she signed for the divorce. Because all over her social media, she is having contact with Ahmed Elmi from 2011 to 2015. Not only is she having contact with him, she literally was posting pictures of her having physical contact with them. They're hugging, taking photos of each other in London in 2015. And Ahmed Elmi, we got in touch with him back in 2016. He admits being the person in the photo, but says he was just at some event. He doesn't know who the woman standing next to him is. He admits that he had a wild night in London, mm-hmm. with this woman who he can't identify, but happened to marry a man with his exact same first name and two middle names and last name. Now, I did actually bother to do the a homework to rule out if there was anybody else named Ahmed Nur Said Elmi. There is not. There was nobody else alive around his age with that name in either England or the United States. So for what he said to be true, that he did not know her, there has to be a second person, but there simply is no records of one.
Now, when you say it's her brother, Are you saying because you can't get the birth certificates because she said that her birth certificates were lost in the civil war in Somalia, which is reasonable to believe. Are you saying mm-hmm. that this is a brother or like I have a guy I refer to as my brother. We've known each other since we were kids. He lived with us. You know, he's practically raised by my parents, but he's not my brother. But I consider him my brother. Is that the kind of brother you think this is? Or is this an actual blood brother?
You know, I am unable to determine if this is a blood brother. No one's going to be able to determine that without a test. However, it is clear to me from what I've published and from information I have not published yet. I did share some of that with you, Glenn, earlier. Mm-hmm. I'm getting that confirmed by our attorneys over here, and I'll publish it as soon as I can. But the government of London and the government of the United States certainly was told that this person was her brother on several occasions.
Now let's hear about AOC's campaign finance fraud business's Kennedy program. Play soundbite 5, please.
Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is full of hot baloney about everything. And in the last 24 hours, we've learned just how big of a hypocrite the freshman socialist congresswoman really is. And some of it could put her in legal jeopardy, Alex. Remember how Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has been so vocal against dark money in politics? How transparency was so important, you guys? Yeah, well, looks like that might have been BS, too, according to a new Federal Elections Commission complaint. AOC's chief of staff allegedly funneled nearly $1 million in donations through a pair of political action committees. That part is fine, but then they went into two private companies that he also controlled. And that, as they say in Germany, is a big 99, because you're not allowed to hide that kind of money. Naturally, Ocasio-Cortez is denying any wrongdoing. Watch.
There is no violation, so there's no violation.
Do you think that's a sign of you taking dark money?
Oh, no. I'm 100%
equal.
Thank you.
It's no dark money, what? But if true, what kind of trouble could Team AOC really be in? And is this the kind of thing that could sink her brand new political career? Joining me now, attorney Gail Trotter with all the answers. So, Gail, what is the big deal in this FEC complaint?
Right. Well, these are serious and troubling allegations. And if they're true, they could result in serious consequences, including jail time. Essentially, we have very strict campaign finance laws that require reporting, which goes into what you're talking about, the hypocrisy, that there's a need for transparency. And then there are also campaign contribution limits. And these allegations basically pull back the veil on what possibly her campaign was doing in coordination with an independent PAC, a PAC that's supposed to not be controlled by the campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And then also the allegations are that money was taken from the PACs, funneled into separate organizations that were not PACs, and they were disguised as consulting fees.
Hmm.
And thus, that
sounds like a really great way to make money, though.
Just
pay yourself hundreds of thousands of dollars in consulting fees. Ain't politics great? Who says you can't make a bunch of money? So I understand why her chief of staff, Saikat Chakrabarty, might be in trouble. But why is AOC potentially in hot water as well?
Right. Well, the candidates are required to file forms. And if you look at the forms that have been put in these news reports, it did not show that AOC and her chief of staff, who was a campaign manager at that time, were controlling this PAC. And that is a failure. Anytime you submit a federal election reporting form, you need to be truthful. You need to be honest. And it's so ironic that AOC has been out there talking about transparency and the malign influence of money in politics. And yet these are very clear rules that every candidate has to follow.
Who has violated these rules in the past that we might know about? Is there a high profile story that?
Yes. There was a recent case in 2015 under similar factual allegations of this with AOC and her campaign. And the person who was prosecuted for those criminal allegations had to serve jail time. So this is a very serious allegation that could really derail the socialist want-to-be of the Democratic Party. And as you started at the very beginning of this segment, when you can't even get the rules right and mm-hmm. follow the laws, if you're trying to add additional laws and you disregard the laws that are already on the books, it makes constituents wonder what your agenda is.
Well, and her chief of staff, he's a tech millionaire. He's a multimillionaire, made a bunch of money in Silicon Valley, and he went on MSNBC and basically laid out a roadmap for this very thing. And he says in his facts page that it was no secret what he was doing. They were doing something new. They were doing something big. And with her, it certainly worked because Justice Democrats were backing a number of up-and-coming political campaigns. And hers obviously got the most traction. She won and has stumbled into a high degree of notoriety since then. But some of the defenses she might be using have also been used by the Trump White House and, you know, talking about unorthodox approaches to politics, which is fine. And also, you know, these are first time politicians and they're going to make mistakes. But it doesn't seem like AOC is really going to be gracious and forgiving in terms of some of the mistakes the president has made.
Well, and maybe she should understand the law before she's out there trying to make new legislation to limit the freedoms of fellow Americans. So I would say that's incumbent on her to understand what the law is, particularly when she's entrusted with her constituents' money who want to contribute to her campaign. And ignorance of the law is no defense.
No, she might find that out the hard way. It's really interesting. And, you know, I can see how her chief of staff may be in trouble. But, you know, these just growing pains of being the boss, I guess. Gail Trotter, thank you so much.
Great to be with you, Kennedy.
Amen, sister.
You might wonder where these people get all the money they have to promote themselves. As I mentioned, there are many very rich and powerful people and institutions out there providing financial backing for these people and their endless attempts to destroy Donald Trump. From what I've been reading and hearing about recently, there are large and enormously powerful forces around the world pouring billions of dollars into left-wing causes. And there is certainly a growing body of evidence that suggests these forces are not only very powerful, but connected and well-organized nationally and internationally, and committed to bringing out the destruction of America as we have known it. Breitbart News carried an article recently which gives another example of what I'm talking about. It cited hundreds of millions of dollars in so-called dark money being funneled into left-wing causes by a network of organizations founded and run by a former Clinton administration official. The title of it was Big Money in Dark Shadows. The subtitle read Arabella Advisors $500 million Dark Money Network. It was from a report by Hayden R. Ludwig of the Capital Research Center, which bills itself as America's investigative think tank. In the executive summary of the report, it stated, quote, "The political left often criticizes and the mainstream media frequently report on the network of center-right nonprofits funded by billionaire entrepreneurs Charles and David Koch. But few politicos know of a left-wing leviathan in Washington, D.C. with a reach rivaling that of the Koch network. This study by the Capital Research Center documents a shadowy web into which nearly $600 million flowed in 2017. The most recent year for which data are available. Operating under the aegis of philanthropy, this network is housed and staffed by a for-profit, privately held consultancy called Arabella Advisors, LLC. Arabella manages four nonprofit entities, the New Venture Fund, 1630 Fund, Windward Fund, and Hopewell Fund, each of which shares an address and interlocking offices with Arabella. Philanthropic advising is lucrative for Arabella, in part because its clients are so wealthy. It claims its donors' assets are worth more than $100 billion. The line between philanthropy and political advocacy at Arabella is blurry indeed. Most of the projects hosted by the four funds and financed by Arabella's donors advocate for controversial positions on social issues, for expansion of government, or both. Yet thanks to the unique financial arrangements of the network and a lack of donor disclosure, it is impossible to trace which organization pays for the various campaigns and political movements spawned by Arabella's funds. The report continues. Between 2013 and 2017, the Arabella network received a staggering $1.6 billion in contributions, which it has used to advance its donors' agenda through dozens of front groups and AstroTurf initiatives. The Arabella network of funds is also growing rapidly. From 2013 to 2017, the network's revenues grew by an incredible 392%. Arabella's network often plays host to highly influential on the left. For example, the Democracy Alliance, a network of donors co-founded by billionaire George Soros, has used the New Venture Fund and the 1630 Fund to host at least 8 projects that don't disclose their original funders. While financial information for the 2018 election year has not been disclosed, the Arabella network will likely show continued steep revenue growth. Arabella Advisors provides much more to the institutional left than donor advice. It runs a network of hundreds of front groups. These groups are generally little more than websites created to give the appearance of full-fledged grassroots organization tackling a niche area, protesting President Trump's judicial nominees, including Justice Brett Kavanaugh, pushing environmental causes, propping up Obamacare, and attacking the Department of Health and Human Services for revoking Obamacare rules that had compelled religious groups to pay for birth control. These front groups are housed in 4 Arabella-controlled sister nonprofits, each of which is profiled here in detail. Arabella calls its relationship to these nonprofits deep partnerships, but that is a serious understatement. The 4 nonprofit funds were created by the firm and share interlocking boards of directors and officers, mainly composed of Arabella Advisors' own leadership. Key Arabella officers work alongside or sit on each of the fund's boards of directors. Now, the report says that Eric Kessler founded Arabella Advisors and currently works as a principal and senior managing director. It further states, Kessler comes from a wealthy Chicago family. Prior to joining the Clinton administration, Kessler was national field director for the League of Conservation Voters, a major 501c, that is, nonprofit, environmental advocacy group that has been described as a quote, dark money heavyweight, unquote, by the left-leaning Center for Policy Integrity. He was later appointed to the Clinton administration to work on conservation issues. According to a biography on the website Friends of the Global Fight, Kessler later served as a member of the Clinton Global Initiative, an arm of the Bill, Hillary, and Chelsea Clinton Foundation. His official Arabella Advisors biography, however, makes no mention of his affiliation with the scandal-ridden Clinton Foundation. It mentions also in the report that even the Washington Post, the radical left-wing Washington Post, had criticized Clinton for, quote, intermingling foundation and paid work through millions of dollars in speaking fees paid by companies and organizations that are also major donors to the Clinton Foundation. So as you can see, there are powerful forces working behind the scenes promoting all this leftist ideology as mainstream and attempting, and no doubt to a certain extent succeeding, to influence U.S. and other nations' elections and governments. Let's get the take on this from that feared and hated conspiracy theorist Alex Jones of Infowars.com. Jones often talks about the Chinese cons in the U.S., as exemplified recently by the NBA's bowing to them and muzzling criticism of mainland China's efforts to exert control over semi-autonomous Hong Kong. Now, the clip we're about to play starts with another clip from the Ingram Angle program on Fox News with the president's lawyer, Rudolph Giuliani, and I believe his name is Joseph DeGenova, who was, I believe, the former attorney for District of Columbia. It also ends up with that same clip, plays it again. But after that goes down, then Jones lays out his concerns about what's really going on here. Will you play soundbite 6, please?
So we should see the public announcement of these indictments, and what Giuliani had to say on Fox is in line with that. This needs to happen. It has to happen. Trump must get on the offense, or the deep state will only be more emboldened to illegally remove him from office via this whole ongoing coup attempt we're witnessing.
For years, Obama had a pay-for-play operation in his administration that is disgusting. And one of the reasons they're fighting so hard, if Biden comes out, so does Clinton come out, and about three others. This goes right to the top of the Obama administration, and the administration
Obama wanted to keep...
I didn't have scandals. It'll be the most scandal-ridden administration in our history.
Obama
didn't care about ethics. He didn't care, otherwise it wouldn't happen.
That's right.
A vice president should have been stopped from doing this by a president who had the slightest bit of integrity. But a Chicago Paul like Obama, pay for play, 8 times, millions of dollars for your vice president, and hundreds of millions for your secretary of state.
Foundation. This was
all. Just bought the offices.
Joe, how confident you are in the next couple weeks, we're going to know a lot more from Horowitz, Durham, and the rest.
This is going to be bang, bang couple of weeks.
InfoWar. The most banned network in the world.
We've heard a lot of talk about indictments coming soon and Trump's going to move against the deep state and the indictments are just a few months away. Well, I haven't seen Rudolph Giuliani make statements that are that strong until recently, and he made more of those statements on Fox News just the other night. So I thought I would get into that when we come back. Fireworks in October, Giuliani says Biden, Clinton, Obama to be exposed within weeks. Well, that's the intel, the information I have, and that's also sources that we have, and that's why the deep state is moving so quickly to try to block all this out. It's why they're panicking so hard right now. It's why they're trying to brand Trump as a criminal and basically have an unconstitutional coup against him with these hoax whistleblowers, is because Trump doesn't have any other choice. Hillary and the corrupt deep state that have been selling this country out forever wouldn't just go away. They want to continue their control. They believe that America is their prey, like a lion that's killed a gazelle, and by God, they're going to finish that meal. And after getting away with their crimes for so long, they believe they're politically bulletproof, and they believe that Trump, as they've said, is an anomaly. Of course, Trump's not an anomaly. While the arrogant globalists were congratulating themselves and patting each other on the back, we were building a populist, nationalist, anti-globalist movement that started back with people like Cleon Skousen and, of course, Barry Goldwater, long before Ron Paul or even Ronald Reagan picked up the anti-New World Order mantle, which they did a great job overall doing, at least in rhetoric. But we got very, very serious about it and pointed out that the CFR and other globalist groups were maneuvering China into a dominant power position, and that they were going to then export that tyranny here to the United States through the corporations that basically set up China as a slave colony. So I'm going to first define why China is so important in this system and how we were the first to really point this out from the opposition. The globalists have been admitting it in their own white papers for a long time. And then we're going to get into Trump calling up the Marines, coming indictments, and so much more today. I have harped and just really endlessly talked about communist China for 22 years or so of my 25-year tenure on air. And that's because it became very apparent by the mid-1990s that the CFR and other globalist groups were not playing games. They were deindustrializing the U.S. on purpose. They were demoralizing us by design. And they were strategically moving industry and rare earth minerals and all the other components of civilization to China and then making them exempt from global regulations and taxes. They then put them on the WTO and let them basically violate all the rules that everybody else had to follow. So they've been set up as a globalist slave colony of 1.4 billion people to strategically 4 major corporations take over the planet. So I want to be clear, communist China is a criminal multinational network ruling over the poor people of China who are smart and hardworking, but because they have had such a huge population for 6,000 years, they have very low value on human life, and the people have been basically slaves and serfs in that entire history. So the communists were just a new form of feudalism and serfdom taking over in 1949 from the Chinese emperors who had had a similar form of slavery over them. But it's the multinational corporations about 150 years ago, the robber barons, that figured out how to deploy communism against areas of Europe that were freeing their serfs and Russia that was freeing its serfs. They can then hype the serfs up and say, well, don't just be free, overthrow your czars, overthrow your kaisers, which czar just means king in Russian, kaiser, again, just means king in German. And so it's not that the feudal kings were good. It's that they were being replaced with something that was totally godless, anti-family, and didn't even want a middle class or any merchants to exist, but wanted total centralized control. And it was the British oligarchs and the American oligarchs that were funding the 1917 revolution. So at the end of World War II, when the United States saved China from Japan and their invasion that killed millions, our evil globalist government put Mao Zedong into power. And that's all declassified. That's all public. And so when you see what's happening in China today, it's totally critical to understanding that the corporations want censorship, the Fortune 100. They want to get rid of the American system of big middle class. They want slave labor. They like communist China. They're not being dictated to by communist China. They put the Chi Coms in power. And the Chi Coms carried out eugenics operations against their own people. One-child policies, organ harvesting, you know, putting millions in camps, killing Christians, killing Buddhists. They believe that it'll finally be the communist experiment that works, but it's not even a communist system. No, ladies and gentlemen, it is a tyrannical, just kleptocracy that uses up the population as total slaves. But as the world awakens to this, it's beyond critical to not just make China the bad guy. The people aren't bad. It's the ruling class there put in by the globalists that have hijacked us. They just haven't been able to break our traditions of private property and religious freedom and right to self-defense because we already had those traditions and had defeated the British crown in the 1780s. We had fought for our freedom. The Chinese never had freedom, so that's why they were so easily subverted and turned into an engine of absolute abject corruption and evil. We'll be talking more about that today, but when you decry the Chi-Coms, decry the major corporations that virtue signal and push racial division and kneeling during the national anthem, and America was never great, it'll never be great, and no borders, no walls, no USA at all, and remember that the same sickness that took over Russia, that's taken over China, is trying to fully take over here and preaching the exact same stuff. All the Democrat candidates sound just like Mao Zedong. And they say political power grows out of the barrel of a gun. And Buttigieg says, we're going to take your guns because it's about government having power over you. So see, they're moving in for the kill.
And so this is not just a question about policy. This is a question about power.
Now let's shift gears back to the United States. Rudolph Giuliani, Trump's consigliere, as they call him, has come out on Fox News and said, look, very soon they're all about to be exposed. And, of course, the Justice Department was told there was an indictment of McCabe, and it went up to the deputy head, AG, and they said, please shoot this down. And they said, no, that was almost a month ago. So we should see the public announcement of these indictments, and what Giuliani had to say on Fox is in line with that. This needs to happen. It has to happen. Trump must get on the offense, or the deep state will only be more emboldened to illegally remove him from office via this whole ongoing coup attempt we're witnessing.
For years, Obama had a pay-for-play operation in his administration that is disgusting. And one of the reasons they're fighting so hard, if Biden comes out, so does Clinton come out, and about three others. This goes right to the top of the Obama administration, and the administration
Obama wanted to keep.
I didn't have scandals. It'll be the most scandal-ridden administration in our history.
Obama
didn't care about ethics. He didn't care, otherwise it wouldn't happen.
That's right.
A vice president should have been stopped from doing this by a president who had the slightest bit of integrity. But a Chicago Paul like Obama, pay for play, eight times, millions of dollars for your vice president, and hundreds of millions for your secretary of state.
The foundation. This was all.
He just bought the offices.
Joe, how confident you are in the next couple weeks, we're going to know a lot more from Horowitz, Durham, and the rest.
This is going to be bang, bang, couple of weeks.
Jones is not alone in his concerns about what he sees as the globalists' effort to destroy America. Here's Rush Limbaugh talking about it also. Play soundbite 7, please.
I'm glad this came up again because I didn't really conclude this yesterday. This piece on transnationalism is the word for it, as used by the proponents. They really don't call it globalism because globalism causes red flags to raise. Transnationalism seems much less an affront. Transnational, why? Who could argue with transnationalism? What it actually means is the joining together of every nation in the world under a single government. And the European Union serves as the model for this. So here is a little history. The European Union forced the removal of democratically elected leaders in Italy and Greece. Led by Germany, they facilitated mass migration from the developing world without the consent of the people in these countries. Angela Merkel did it in Germany. It's been going on in the UK for a long time. None of the people in these countries, France, none of these people voted for it. The leaders there just unilaterally proclaimed open borders. Angela Merkel did it on the basis that the German birth rate was below replacement levels, if you remember. So Angela Merkel said, we're not going to have enough people to fill all the jobs this country has, this economy is going to need. So she was very proud when she announced a policy. This is just within the last 3 years, a new policy of allowing minimum 800,000 migrants from the Middle East into Germany. And she did this as though it was a major achievement. Well, it wasn't just Germany. It was Greece, and it was Italy and France, and it was done for a specific purpose. It was done to dilute or water down the identity of each one of these member states in the European Union. Now, it appears that the rules have changed as the liberal global order envisioned by Reagan Thatcher conservatives has morphed into the transnational progressive order of Barack Obama and Angela Merkel. For decades, conservative thinking has ignored the globalist challenge. So it was really downplayed as something that was happening. And if you wanted credibility in conservative circles, you had to publicly disavow any belief in this. The United States is one of the major problems in the world because the United States has an unfair amount of the world's resources. And thus, the United States has an unfair amount of the world's wealth. And this is simply not right. And they don't care. These people are not capitalists in the strict sense. They may run corporations and they may practice fealty to certain capitalistic business practices. But in terms of free this, free that, free markets, they're not capitalists. They believe that there is a small percentage of people in the world who are eminently qualified to rule others. And they try to tell themselves that their desires are for a utopia, for a benevolent leadership. The United States, in these people's view, is the problem because it has way too much of everything. Too much military power, too much economic power, too much wealth, too much freedom. All of this has to change if global governance is to happen. Obama and his people tell us that America's superpower status is not really deserved because our founding is unjust because of slavery or some other thing. That our economic power is not really deserved because what do? We stole resources from other nations around the world and all these other horrible things. And so we've got to pay that back. We've got to recognize that what we have, not all of it's legitimate. So you start raising people's taxes and you come out with government health care. You do everything you can to slow down the engine of the U.S. economy. And when it happens, you tell people this is the new normal. Get used to it. And the more they spoke about it with the media on their side, the more people they were able to convince. But when Trump came along with Make America Great Again, that's when panic set in. Because that's what they were in the process of having to defeat. The idea that America is for America. The idea that America is America first. Not to the exclusion of other nations, as Trump has pointed out. Make America Great Again does not mean making other people, other countries, lesser. They all ought to be doing the same thing. There's no reason to stop growth. There's no reason for prosperity to end. There's no reason to think that America is some tarnished place. So Trump comes along and actually talks about the sovereignty in speeches to the United Nations. And I'll tell you, folks, without a doubt, the American leadership class is crucial to the success of a global governance project. And it's because of the power of the United States as a nation. For global governance to work, the United States has to be diminished. And it would be best if America diminished itself willingly. It's what Clinton meant. Clinton said, we have to build a global social system for a world in the future in which America was no longer the leading power. That's what we're up against right now, folks. That is the Democrat Party today. That is what Trump and all the rest of us are actually up against. A group of people who recognize who think the United States is the problem in the world because of our wealth and our prosperity and our freedom, and who think it needs to be diminished and cut down in size if there is ever to be true fairness and true equality and all of these other bromides that the left seems to believe in.
There's a saying, just because you're paranoid, it doesn't mean they're not out to get you. And while the left constantly poo-poos talk of globalist forces at work to transform, that is, destroy America, as hysterical conspiracy theories, we are finding more and more evidence that these conspiracy theories contain more truth than theory. This is something we had all better get involved in finding out about and resisting if we're going to preserve America as we had known it. Now, we're running a little low on time, but I believe we have a caller on the line. He's called into the show before. He's lived in Hong Kong and has seen up close the communist Chinese and totalitarianism. Cato, are you there?
Yes, James. This is Cato. Thank you for taking my call.
Great. Good to have you back with us. What did you want to talk about today?
James, I want to tell you and your audience about my grandmother, who have firsthand experience of the Chinese military takeover of South China in 1950. As you know, recently, on October 1st, the Chinese Communists celebrated the 70th anniversary of the founding of Communist China. 70 years ago, on October 1st, 1949, they marched into Beijing, formerly known as Peking, and declared their founding. At that time, Chiang Kai-shek was fighting a desperate rearguard action in central China after he lost a decisive battle to the communists. And eventually, he led his followers, 1.5 million of them, to Taiwan. And he transferred the seat of government of the Republic of China from Nanking to Taipei, and where he declared Taipei as the base of a future free China, and Taiwan as the unsinkable aircraft carrier against global communism. In the meantime, leaders in the South, military and political leaders, were desperate to organize a large defense of South China. They scraped together a force, they said 500,000, but actually those are mostly inexperienced, lightly armed local militia. And they declared Canton the capital of the provisional government of the Republic of China. They even elected a provisional president, a General Li Chongning. But the communists, with Chiang Kai-shek out of the way, were ready to launch the final onslaught. In a recently release of information, they mustered at that time, they estimated 5 million fighting forces. Of those 5 million, over 800,000 were seasoned soldiers. And 3 months after that, Canton fell. The provisional President Lee fled to the U.S. and was given asylum. And later, he was interviewed by the University of Columbia, where he gave a detailed account of those final days. And people that's interested, they can check out and go to University of Columbia Oral History Project. But in the meantime, when Canton fell in 1950, my grandmother was living in a city on the bank of the Pearl River, halfway between Canton and Hong Kong. when the communist troops marched into the city, underground communist agents surfaced and they took over the local government. They then organized each neighborhood into political committees, and they ordered every household to register. Since at that time my grandfather was in the Philippines, my grandmother was summoned to appear before the committee, and under pressure of torture, she agreed to surrender all of her family fortune. So she gave the communists a detailed account of her cash, her bank account, her gold and silver. In those days, because of the collapse of the economy, most people kept some gold at home. And also all her personal jewelry and watches and American fountain pen. They then followed my grandmother home with a team of inspectors, and they ransacked the whole place for any hidden treasure. After that, they confined my grandmother and her three children, including my mother, her sister, and her younger brother, in one room, and they divide up the rest of the house, and they house two proletariat families. And they told my grandmother that from now on, these two proletariat families were to be the new masters of the household, and my grandmother has to listen to their every orders. This is
Cato,
this process. They actually have a term.
Cato.
Yes, James?
Cato, I'm sorry to interrupt. We're running out of time here. I think that's quite interesting, and it's a good it's a good example of what will happen or what could happen here. In the 30 seconds or so that we have left, would you like to wrap this up?
Yes. I'd like to say that after I came to this country, I found out in college that the Chinese communists eliminated 3 to 5 million people in order to confiscate the property to redistribute to the proletariat. They call it the dictatorship of the proletariat. And Mao Zedong said, revolution is not a dinner party. I guess you can say he meant what he said. So I just want the American people to know that.
Well, thank you so very much for letting us know about that. We'll talk more about that in the future, I hope. Well, that's
okay.
It for another show. Thank you. Thank you, Cato. As always, I hope you found it of interest. We'll be back again 2 weeks from today in the same time slot. Thank you for listening, and good night.